cemetery near the Lights Chapel. Ed refused to allow even a small chance for the body to rise as a wraith. And that was the end of it. You've earned 102 experience points, 450 total, 137 unused. Your attributes have increased. Brawn, mind, and endurance plus 1. Your skills have increased. Melee plus 2. Dungeon engineering and leadership plus 1. Spellcasting plus 1. Your dungeon options and aura costs have adjusted accordingly. You have new advancement options. Chapter 27. The Rogue. The gentle rocking swayed Ed in rhythm with the ship's hull in front of him. He was surrounded by a small crowd who, like him, had come to see the Viceroy Dianthus set sail. Above him, a web of ropes and knots surrounded the vast sailcloth spread around the Viceroy's mast while the sunburnt sailors finished the last preparations.
"Here's one more mystery solved," Ed thought,
his feet firmly planted on the wooden planks of his floating platform. One platform among hundreds, each interconnected to the others by thick sets of rope. He had wondered before about the effects of a bigger moon on a planet like Ivalus. As it turned out, Ivalian tides rose and fell more than Earth's, and that forced ships to moor much farther from port or risk being marooned for hours when the tide changed. Floating platforms were used to connect the ships with Undercity's harbor. An auburn mane gazed at him from the ship's deck. A dark gold face right in front of the distant red sun as it set. Ed waved at the young woman aboard the Viceroy, and she returned the gesture. Catalan's enthusiasm was reflected in her face. It gave her a flush to her cheeks and a glint to her eyes that made her stunningly beautiful. It also helped that enough weeks had passed for the both of them to recover from their wounds during the defense of the haunt. Of course, not all wounds could heal. Ed's left hand was carefully covered in bandages and kept hidden in his coat's pocket, out of sight.
"I still can't believe I'm doing this,"
Catalan told him. She had to shout to make herself heard among the chatter of the crowd. She gave Ed a nervous smile, like a teenager about to go on her first road trip.
"In a couple months, I'll be wandering around a Plexian city. Can you imagine how much trouble a girl can run into on an entirely different continent?"
"Probably lots," Ed reassured her. Her happiness was contagious, and it made it hard for him to be sad about her leaving town. He had to settle for bittersweet once again.
"I bet you'll stumble into mortal danger on your first night."
"Gods, I hope so."
It wasn't Plexth that worried Ed, but the trip there. Alder insisted that every self-respecting adventurer who traveled by ship always ended up shipwrecked and stranded on some exotic island. So Ed had gifted Catalan a low-level water-breathing medallion and a watertight locket loaded with water purification tablets, all courtesy of the Haunt's budding black market booze empire.
Just in case.
"Don't worry. I'll be sure to send a couple of message spells your way once I'm settled in, so you know I'm still alive,"
she told him.
"Likewise," Ed said.
He understood her better now, and in her position, he would have left Undercity too. After all, Steravos would suffer the consequences of her father's selfishness for a long time. Plexth was her only chance at living a normal life. For Catalan's idea of normal, that is. The Viceroy whistled a low, deep warning, and the ship's quartermaster called for sailors to weigh anchors. Slowly, as one, the crowd on the platform said their final farewells to the smaller crowd above the ship.
"All right,"
Catalan said nervously.
"This is it."
"Good luck," Ed told her. "May you find what you're looking for."
Sailors climbed the rigging like monkeys as they undid the last of the knots. Slowly, the Viceroy Dianthus began to distance itself from the platforms. Ed saw Catalan's face grow smaller and smaller.
"I can say the same to you,"
Catalan yelled back.
"Good luck, Ed. You're a good man, remember that."
After the distance grew too great for yelling, they waved at each other.
"Here's another mystery solved," Ed thought, watching her go.
Character sheets often couldn't reflect the person that owned them. It said nothing of their personality, wants, or desires. But sometimes they gave you a clue. For example, although Ed couldn't see Catalan's updated character sheet, he knew that in the class section, it no longer displayed thief. After facing Torst, she had become an adventurer through and through, so her updated class was rogue. He nodded to himself, then realized he was smiling alone like a hopeless fool. Behind him, most of the crowd had already left. The Viceroy was but a dot on the purple horizon.
"Time to head for the folly, I'd say," he told himself.
While he walked back, alone, in the direction of the inn, he ran into two known faces at the edge of the harbor. They were dressed in normal clothes, and as such they could have been artisans or merchants. The boots gave their real profession away, though.
"So, there she goes," said Carmack, nodding toward the open sea. "Great gal, isn't she?"
"Carmack."
This time, Ed got the name right.
"How are your ribs treating you?"
Carmack patted his chest.
"Ah, they only hurt at night now. So I'd say pretty great."
His partner was the woman that Catalan had confronted at the folly. She nodded curtly at Ed as a manner of greeting.
"Edward Wright? Name's Pris. We have met before, I think."
Ed shook her hand.
"Call me Ed."
The three of them headed for the folly. It was getting late, and there were parts of Undercity where you wouldn't want to roam around at night. You could stumble into a zombie.
"So, Ed,"
said Pris.
"A little bird told us you'd need a new team to handle your affairs in Undercity."
She gave him a probing grin.
"Is that so?"
"Little bird told us that business is booming," Carmack said.
They walked past an official-looking sign hanging above a lamppost. It said, "Buying and consuming unregistered alcohol is expressly forbidden by royal decree. The watch will prosecute anyone breaking the law. You've been warned." Ed raised an eyebrow at them.
"Maybe it is."
"Well, in that case,"
Pris went on,
"you should know we're the best associates for your kind of business. We come recommended by one of the few guild-registered rogues, after all."
"I see," said Ed, with a smile from ear to ear. "In that case, I'd say this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship."
"Oh, yes,"
Carmack said with a happy, greedy glint in his eye.
"A beautiful friendship indeed."
A couple of days later, Ed arrived at the haunt's outskirts, a small contingent of spider warriors leading the way. He didn't know their names. They belonged to that new queen's cluster, the one under Laurel's command. After the spiders made sure the area was secure, they retreated into the forest, black chitin contrasting with the snow that spread in all directions. The encampment in front of the dungeon's main entrance was now abandoned, the tarps slowly being repurposed by the drones for other endeavors. They had their work cut out for them. Ed's new projects for expanding the dungeon required all their attention. Flanking the encampment, located by the rocky hills, was a stable under construction. Hopefully, they'd have horses by the end of winter. On the other side, opposite the stable, was a small promontory where the bodies of those killed during Nikolai's attack had been buried. Andrina had seeded the ground with flowers, which would spring in a couple months. As he neared the dungeon's entrance, a female kaftar dressed in spider armor came to escort him inside.
"Welcome back, Lord Edward,"
the kaftar told him.
"Yumiya, how have things been in my absence?"
"Same, same. Lots of work, lots of work. Not nearly enough action in my humble opinion."
Yumiya and the other kaftars in Kaga's elite hunting squad had taken sourly the news that they'd missed their chance at facing and killing a wraith.
"I hope it stays that way for a long time," Ed said honestly.
Yumiya shared with him the few tidbits of gossip she had caught. Kleck was out, along with Druzb, on a mission to find other Batblin clouds hiding in the forest and convince them to join the haunt. One of Yorche's daughters and that young carpenter apprentice had begun seeing each other in secret. From their parents, at least. A goat had stumbled into Andrina's workshop and drunk some strange concoction, and now it could talk. Mostly to demand food. There was talk of resettling the area that had burned down during the battle for Barova. With Ed's help, rebuilding could go very fast indeed, and he still had a tiny dungeon hidden somewhere inside Barova's remains.
"How about our prisoners?" Ed asked.
Still not talking,
said Yumiya sourly. Ed had insisted that the few survivors of Nikolai's rebel group should not be tortured for information, as the Kaftars had suggested. Instead, they were kept captive in the Haunt's shiny new prisons until Ed could think of a way to convince them to speak.
They'll see reason soon enough.
Or else?
Suggested Yumiya.
Or else, agreed Ed.
The Haunt's entrance hall was more populated than ever. A bunch of kids chased each other, going in and out of tunnels and laughing themselves hoarse. One was dressed in a surprisingly accurate approximation of a wraith's shroud and did most of the chasing. Batblins were everywhere, mostly hauling brewery stuff like tankards and barrels. The drones could have done it, but Ed had discovered that batblins were easier to deal with if they had something to tire themselves. A group of middle-aged women passed him by. They carried baskets and bundles of cloth and were headed in the direction of the Haunt's new loom. When they saw Ed, some giggled, and he received enough curtsies to make him blush. The villagers had a much different attitude than they'd had before. Certainly no one was talking of escaping the Haunt now, and that matter had been put to rest for good when Ed had shown them the sheer size of their quarters. Granted, still under construction, but progressing well. Hell, some people, like Yorche and his family, had taken minionship packs despite Ed's warnings. They insisted that the Haunt was, or would be, the most secure place in Staravos, so they may as well make their loyalty official.
Speaking of Yorche...
The blacksmith came out of one of the many tunnels and passageways, clearly having waited for Ed's return for a while. He had been hard at work, and his overalls were dirty and stained.
Ed, I wanted to talk to you.
Yorche gave him a friendly smack in the back that almost sent Ed sprawling against the wall. They exchanged pleasantries for a while, and Yumiya headed off to meet with the rest of her squad.
So, tell me,
Yorche started after the small talk was done.
I've seen that trophy you keep in the treasury room, the leg of that spider queen you killed.
He tapped his chest casually.
How would you feel about a trophy that you wear around?
What do you mean?
Asked Ed, thinking of the Kaftar's spider armor.
Well, I know this may be a bit grisly for some, but...
Yorche shrugged.
Remember that the drones removed Nikolai's armor before throwing him into the oven? Well, I have the armor with me. What remains of it, I mean. It's all melted and unusable, but the steel is of excellent quality, prime for enchanting. And I could reforge it for you. A dungeon lord needs a suitably impressive set of armor, I'd say. And nothing does the job like plate armor reworked from one taken from his fallen enemy. I could do breastplate, greaves, braces, the full set.
Ed considered the offer.
You know what? A few months ago, I'd have been terrified of the prospect of wearing something that a man had on while burning to death.
He passed a hand across his hair and sighed.
Today, I'm seeing my Kaftars nonchalantly wearing the bones of the friends of spiders under my command, and they don't seem to care at all.
That was all the confirmation that Yorche needed.
I'll get to work immediately. Visit the forge so that Ivona can take your measurements, will you?
The blacksmith headed off before Ed could change his mind.
I'm sure this won't get out of control at all, Ed assured himself as he watched Yorche depart.
He reached the infirmary to pay Kes a quick visit. He found her arguing angrily with Andrina and Levy, who were trying their best to convince her to stay in bed at least a bit longer.
How can you recover if you don't have enough rest?
Andrina told her, pushing the still-weak mercenary back into bed.
I've rested long enough,
Kes complained. She was still covered in bandages, and some of her broken bones hadn't fully healed.
If my old sergeant saw me like this, she'd be so pissed.
Would she?
Asked Levy.
Or would she order you to shut up and heal so you're going to fight another day?
Then Kes did something that Ed had never expected from her. She pouted.
You're just trying to keep me in bed so you can skip out on your training some more.
Levy shrugged.
Believe what you want, but from now on, I'll be your best student.
Will I have to order the drones to keep you down, Kes?
Ed joked as he entered the room. Kes's pout vanished as soon as she saw him.
Well, I'm just angry my skills are gonna get rusty is all. If enough time passes, I'll have to grind him back up.
Don't worry, Ed told her. I'm sure Kaga will gladly help you with that.
Besides, whatever skill ranks she'd lose for lack of practice, she had more than made up for in experience gain. After facing Nikolai and the others by herself, she'd ended up gaining even more experience points than Ed himself. Her total was now somewhere around the 600 mark. Of course, such a gain meant that it had been one of the biggest risks she'd ever faced in her life. Alder had had a field day explaining his idiot or carpenter line to her. She hadn't been half as amused as he was.
Speaking of people who should be resting.
Levy turned to Ed and extended her open palm demandingly.
Let me see it. Come on, don't make a lady wait.
Now it was Ed's turn to groan.
Do we really have to do this?
How am I, the great head of the Hunt's magical research, supposed to figure out what's wrong with you if you refuse to be examined?
Maybe if you didn't squirm with pleasure every time you see it.
Ed sighed and brought his hand out of his pocket. With badly hidden glee, Levy undid the bandages and revealed the black bones underneath.
Will you look at that?
She said, then gave a low whistle.
Damn,
Kes muttered.
And to think I complained about losing some fingers. I'll bet that hurts like a motherfucker.
Actually,
said Ed, while Levy moved his wrist around to better catch the light of the magical torches.
It doesn't hurt at all.
He waved at Kes with his black bone fingers. Kes winced and looked away.
Thank you. That's exactly how sane people should react.
It's so beautiful,
Levy muttered. She extended her finger and tried to touch the bones. There came a noise like an electrical spark. Ed felt a faint, brief surge of energy. Levy yelped and removed her hand in a hurry.
Son of a bat-blin whore, it stings!
The witch exclaimed, shaking her hand. She turned to a passing group of bat-blins carting a barrel.
Oops! Sorry, Sass, no offense.
Sass, who was leading the bat-blins, shrugged and kept walking. Ed closed the door.
What the hell was that? Ed asked.
Levy shook her head with incredulity.
I lost a point of endurance. There, it's already back. Look, it's not like I'm your foremost expert in all things necromantic, which I am. But I'd say that when your hand, already infused with the dark power of the mantle, came in contact with the wraith and the light's holy fire, well, it had some kind of allergic reaction.
She gave up.
Look, I probably need more knowledge ranks to figure it out, but I'll get there. In the meantime, let's leave it at this. Your hand seems to drain endurance by touch, like a specter. And you probably should keep it away from any lady friends, unless she's into that kind of fun.
Ed dodged the subject as if he had the verbal equivalent of the advanced dodge talent.
So I shouldn't touch people with it. Got it.
Cats these days,
Andrina whispered, shaking her head. Ed stared at the black bones one last time. For an instant, he was sure he could see a faint outline surrounding the bones, like skin made of translucent glass. By the time Ed had left the infirmary and gone upstairs to his quarters, the haunt's activity had dwindled down. It was nighttime outside, and everyone had settled in for the night to enjoy the warmth of the dungeon's chambers and the privacy of their own rooms. As he walked down the corridors, he saw a couple of new tapestries around, made by human hands. He could tell the difference because they were simpler, but had more taste and no obscene depictions.
Is that music?
Ed thought when he was near his quarters. The sound was coming from Alder's room. Ed was about to shrug and go to bed when he caught a brief lyric which got his attention.
Is he singing about...
And the dungeon lord defeated the monster Nikolai in singular combat. And with great magic, he cast overwhelming flames as Nikolai lay flat. And as the monster burned, the dungeon lord said, Hey, asshole, regenerate this. Still need some work,
Alder's voice muttered. Ed reached the bard's door and knocked twice.
Hey, may I come in?
The music stopped.
It's open.
Alder was sitting on a comfortable red oak sofa covered in small pillows. He had a lute in his hands and seemed to be deep in thought.
You showed up at just the right time, Ed,
he told the dungeon lord.
I heard you singing,
Ed said. It was the first time he'd heard the bard compose a song, much less perform.
It was about Nikolai and me, wasn't it? I thought bards didn't enjoy singing about ugly deeds.
There had been nothing glorious about what he had done to Nikolai. There had been no speeches exchanged, no clash of opposing philosophies, only an execution. If Ed could forget all about it. But no, he very well knew he never would. Alder met his gaze and made a gesture that was half apologetic and half understanding.
Look, all those glorious and epic affairs that stories tell you about, they probably were just as violent as your face-off before a bard or two added a bit of spice to the tale.
Shouldn't those kinds of stories be about the best of us? Ed wondered aloud.
He certainly didn't consider what he had done to be song-worthy. Nor himself, for that matter.
A better person may have spared Nikolai's life.
Perhaps I'm not the best bard to answer that,
Alder said.
I never finished my training in Elytra, you know. When I was a teenager, I took passage on a ship to visit the countryside. I wanted to be in an adventure. The ship sank. I was rescued by slavers who sold me to Kale. At the time, he found it amusing to have a bard to tell his story. I never got around to it.
He attempted a few playful notes with his lute.
Actually, I haven't written a song since then. It just... inspiration never arrived. But not long after the Wraith's attack, I sat down and... well, it just came to me. Funny thing is, I always thought I was just a bard who didn't have it in him to be a hero. But it wasn't until after I helped you and Catelyn with the Wraith that the inspiration came.
You saved our lives, Ed pointed out. As far as I'm concerned, you should write a song about yourself.
Between the two of them, Alder was the only one who had his hands clean of blood.
That would be a very boring story,
Alder laughed.
The bard Alder ran a lot and screamed a lot. No, I much prefer my version. You were the one who had to make the hard choices. To be honest, most of the bardic tales I learned in Elytra were so obsessed with presenting us a shiny, pretty tale with perfect rhymes that they forgot to make the stories about actual, real people.
He scratched his chin.
That's the kind of tale I'd like to tell. I lack talent for pretty rhymes, but I may have a chance to sing about real people making hard choices. Trying to do good and sometimes stumbling along the way. To me, that's what makes a good bardic song. Well, maybe with a little artistic license. My one-liners are much better than yours.
Ed could feel his black hand inside his pocket, itching under the bandages. It was true he wasn't the same man that he had been when he'd first arrived in Ivalis. But that man had sworn never to use dark powers like Murmur's Reach, and the man he was now hadn't even hesitated, because his friends were in danger. He had furthered Murmur's agenda without giving a single fuck.
I'm not sure if I'm still a good man, he said. How could I know?
Alder gave him a very strange look.
Like I said, maybe I'm not the best person to answer that question.
He pointed down at the carpeted floor.
How about you ask the good folk below? Those villagers sleeping safe and sound in the new homes you built them. The same people you risked your life for without hesitation, even when they hated your guts. The people who are now making friends with batblins and horned spiders instead of killing them for experience points. You should ask them, Ed. Ask them if they think you're a good man.
Epilogue. That night, Ed was awakened by a sensation of incoming evil pouring forth into reality. Sulfur and ozone filled the air of his bedroom, and the darkness seemed to gain a solid consistency, like that of a beast about to pounce. Ed tapped a small glyph next to his bed, and the magical torches illuminated the room in time for him to see a long, pale hand push open the empty air by the edge of his bed. A white face with no features but a wide smile showed past the wound in reality, black and beady eyes focused on Ed. With spider-like movements, Charon dropped into Ed's bedroom.
You again, Ed stated.
Did you expect someone else?
Charon asked happily.
No.
Then what's with the welcome reception?
Charon pointed at the dozen magical circles of all sizes that saturated the walls, floor, and ceiling of the room. They had been drawn with silver ore and infused with salt. A series of glyphs designed to counter necromantic energies had been drawn in the space left by the circles. Everything had a bit of silver in it. The torches, the bedsheets, the drawer, even Ed's robe.
If I didn't know you, I'd say you just tried to trap me. The boatman himself, when all I wanted to do was pay you a simple visit.
Don't be silly, Ed said. It's just an experiment with decoration. Can't a dungeon lord have his whims?
Charon chuckled darkly, clearly not believing a word of it.
Next time have a legendary ranked cleric design the glyphs. Perhaps then I'll be entertained for a couple seconds.
To prove his point, he did a little tap dance among the circles.
Why are you here, Charon?
Just making my rounds. Visiting a few friends.
We aren't friends.
Is that so?
Charon's smile grew by an inch.
You used my gifts, though. Did you enjoy the power of Murmur's Reach? I don't doubt you've seen the sheer potential of rule-bending that the possession spell offers. And it lets you save the lives of your beloved friends. And what about dear Catelyn, to whom I happily introduced you? Didn't you enjoy her presence, albeit brief, at your bedside? That alone should make you consider me the best of friends.
The Eldritch Abomination chuckled and sat at the foot of Ed's bed.
First of all, fuck you. Second, my friends saved themselves. I only mopped things up. Third, you manipulated me. Again.
Did I?
You sent me to those catacombs so you could fulfill your pact with Torst. You wanted Catelyn alive so the Wraith could drain her.
Ed stared daggers at the being in front of him.
And even before that, you used Torst, too. Sending him to kill that prince? Sparking a war between Haligis and Cerevos? Thousands died.
But why would the Dark ever do something like that?
Charon looked like he was having the best of times.
Fuck you again. Don't patronize me, Ed said.
Charon showed him his palms, as if in surrender, and urged him to continue.
I've asked around. The war happened 10 years ago. It had been during the height of Ivalice Online's popularity back on Earth. The Lothian Dungeon Lords were getting their asses kicked by heroes during that time period. I know it because I played those quests. Haligis was preparing to deal Lothia the final blow.
Ed was mostly speculating, but Charon nodded briefly to confirm it.
Lothia was in no position to survive a war against them, so the Dark distracted Haligis.
One magnificent play by our beloved Murmur,
Charon said. So far, Ed had kept his emotions in check, but seeing the boatmen so nonchalantly celebrate the deaths of so many innocent lives, he wanted to make Charon squirm at least a bit.
Well, you broke your deal with Torst. He died, this time for good. He never got his immortality, and his daughter is alive. You failed, Charon.
Indeed, indeed. Point for Lord Wright. I mean, damn you, you meddling dungeon lord. Curse you, you ruined our plans, and so on.
Charon had the gall of clapping cheerfully. Ed could feel his blood boiling.
You have a few details wrong, though. We didn't break the pact with Torst. He had a chance of becoming a sentient wraith. He had Catelyn right there where he wanted her. He lost the battle against you and her, not us. The Dark gave him his chance, more than enough times. Had he survived the assassination of the prince, we would have turned him into a vampire or something. Not our fault he was incompetent. What, do you think we can predict the future? All you've done was by your own volition. After the catacombs, you could have washed your hands of the whole ordeal. Nikolai? Bah, Abandon your dungeon, rebuild it somewhere else, and wait for the Inquisition to deal with him. Or summon a dark demon and pay him to kill the man for you. You chose to stay. You chose to fight. How was I supposed to know you'd be batshit crazy enough to summon Alita's holy fury on yourself to destroy Torst? Certainly you can't expect the dark contracts to predict all such eventualities. How would that be fair?
Now the eldritch demigod is complaining about fairness. That's it. I'm officially as insane as Levy. But something about Heron's choice of words nagged at him. I didn't summon Alita's fire on myself. The vial of holy water torched Torst.
Really? Asked Heron. Amazing. Only one question. Had you seen holy water in action against undead before what happened to Torst?
Ed shook his head no.
Well, it might melt their face off. It might hurt them a lot. It might turn off their buffs and auras and so on. It might force them to materialize or end their hypnotic charms. What it definitely does not do, though, is cast a divine-ranked banishment upon the poor undead sod. What, you thought a few prayers and some water and the light gods were at your beck and call? Some gods they'd be.
Heron laughed and patted his belly. That laughter didn't augur anything good. But I know what I saw.
What you saw was Alita suddenly discovering the location of a dungeon lord in an open field with a hand willingly covered in holy water. That doesn't happen very often, you see. She had a clear shot. So she cast a banishment all the way from her palace, targeted straight at your hand. Luckily for you, that hand was grasping a wraith, and poor Torst ate most of the damage, and gave you one hell of a scar to show the ladies.
The boatman nodded in the direction of Ed's left hand.
Sure, she missed. But now she knows you're around. Which brings us full circle to the reason why I'm here.
Goosebumps traveled through Ed's back.
She knows you're around.
She was the kind of goddess who purged first and asked questions later.
Oh, shit.
Indeed. The heroes are returning to Storavos. Surely you aren't eager to be in Lord Kale's position, am I right? After all, what you did to him, these new heroes will surely do to you.
Heron inched closer to Ed, beady black eyes shining evilly, a hint of a rotten tongue slithering behind his white smile.
So here I am, Ed, with an offer. Thanks to Halicis mostly focusing on pacifying Storavos these last few years, the Lothian Dungeon Lords have recovered enough to offer a united front. They only need a leader, Ed. Someone with vision. A dash of new blood, with a different way of doing things. Someone who gets things done. What do you say? I'm offering you a promotion. Just say the word, and Murmur will put at your command all the remaining dungeon lords of the Kingdom of Lothia and all the resources of the Netherworld. Lead the forces of the dark in the battle against the light. Do it, and you won't have to fear any mortal man ever again.
Heron gently extended him his open hand in invitation. Ed pondered the offer for as long as such a thing was warranted.
You mean, you want me to lead all those assholes who went around sacrificing children and then lost to a bunch of kids in their underwear thinking they were playing video games? No, I'll pass. I'm doing perfectly fine on my own.
For a faint instant, Ed saw a hint of annoyance in Charon's expression.
Well, that's just rude. At least think it over.
I am not working for you, Ed told him.
He traced an imaginary line in the air.
The dark does its thing, the light does its thing, the haunt does its own thing. Stay in your lane, Heron.
Or what? You'll draw some more magical circles in your room?
Ed calmly pulled his drawer open and took out a small crystal vial filled with water.
Or I give you a hug and douse the both of us with holy water. I bet Alita would enjoy having a word with you, boatman, more than she'd enjoy to take a shot at me.
He held the vial in between them so that Heron could take a good look at it.
You die, Edward.
Try me, asshole. I still have one hand left.
For a long time, neither of them said anything. Ed kept the vial there and held Heron's gaze. Finally, the boatman stood. He was shaking his head sadly.
You know what I like the most about you, Edward?
Heron traced a circle and slowly ripped a hole in the fabric of reality.
You are a practical man. Surely, you'll come to see reason. Hopefully before the heroes kill everyone you know and love. In any case, I'll respect your wishes. We won't meet again until you're ready.
He crawled back into the hellish landscape whence he came. When only his head remained in Ed's bedroom, the boatman turned to him one last time.
Although, I do wonder, what kind of hero will the light send against you? Everyone knows that Alita has a cruel sense of humor, after all.
And he left Ed alone with his thoughts. He remained sitting there, vial in hand, watching the faint glimmer of the magical circles.
Whoever they are,
he said at last as he returned the vial to its drawer,
we'll be waiting.
It was well past closing time, and the store was shrouded in darkness. The purple and pink motif of the walls and the shelves stacked neatly with assorted electronics gained a threatening shade at this hour. Ruined, of course, by the giant laser shark drawn on the floor of the store. Only one man remained, passing the time in his office. The light of his high-end laptop gave his features a sickish tint, not helped at all by the slightly bent shape of his nose breaking the otherwise perfect symmetry of his face.
Fucking boring,
the man whispered tiredly to himself as he downed another caffeinated soda.
The game is all the same these days.
On the screen of his laptop, a pixelated rogue battled solo against an entire clan of trolls, killing them one by one as he hunted across the computer-generated series of tunnels. It was a menial task, well beneath his level, but lately he had run into a string of bad luck. No matter how hard he tried, now he hadn't been able to clear dungeons of hard difficulties and upward. The bad luck had begun right after that asshole, Eddie, had lost his fucking mind right here in Ryan's office months ago. Worst of all, that nutjob had managed to slip away from the incompetent police and was now at large. Ryan doubted that Eddie would be insane enough to try to return to the Laser Shark store, but just in case, his desk was now equipped with a loaded gun, and he had posted a reward for the ex-employee's capture. Anyway, the source of Ryan's frustration tonight had nothing to do with Eddie. It was the fact that no matter how hard he tried, his rogue just didn't perform as well as it used to. Ryan had hoped that without Eddie's conflicting orders seeding confusion in the hunting party, they could finally move on to tougher challenges. Yet the opposite had happened. In fact, they were doing worse.
Must be Mark and Lisa's fault. They just aren't trying hard enough, the ungrateful fucks.
On the screen, a troll challenged his rogue to a duel. Ryan realized that a smaller group of trolls was cowering behind the big one.
Nice try, ugly, but you ain't hiding those experience points from me.
He shadow-stepped past the big troll and killed the smaller ones, who were so stupid they didn't even try to attack him back, while the big troll tried and failed to get past the rogue's incredibly high dodge.
Sure, sure, don't worry. There's enough Ryland Silverblade for you too,
Ryan said after he was done with the small ones. He used his Create Darkness power, activated his Dark Sight, and sneak-attacked the troll, all in a single second, his fingers flying across the macros of his keyboard in a blur. The pixelated bodies of the trolls littered the screen. Rylan's blade was enchanted with a fire spell, so they wouldn't regenerate.
There it is,
Ryan thought as the experience points danced above his character's head. Slowly, the bodies disappeared from the screen. Ryan sighed.
This is boring.
But he wasn't in the mood to risk a run against a high-level dungeon. At least not around this part of Ivalice.
What's it called? Lotus? Lathis? Lattice? Whatever.
The dungeons were getting harder, and he hadn't run into any of a decent lower difficulty so far. On the forums, the few remaining players were complaining about the same thing, so he was sure it wasn't just him. In a corner of the screen, a notification was demanding his attention. He clicked on it, to discover he had a new quest offer.
Well, well, well. Speak of the devil.
Ryan smiled triumphantly. The quest said, the Militant Church has issued a command to all available heroes to step into the nearest summoning portal to investigate the suspected presence of dungeon lords in the previously pacified province of Steravos. Have you missed fighting werewolves in the dark woods and facing vampires in the forgotten mansions of Galtia's mountaintops? Battle awaits, adventurer, in Ivalice Online's most recent expansion, A Return to Steravos. Difficulty, medium. Experience gain, high. Loot, medium.
Finally, Ryan said. Some new content! I was beginning to think the developers had forgotten all about me.
He accepted the quest. Edward Wright. Species, human. Total experience, 450. Unused experience, 137. Claims, lordship. Attributes. Brawn, 11. Agility, 10. Endurance, 12. Mind, 13. Spirit, 14. Plus 1 Dungeon Lord Mantle, equals 15. Charm, 13. Plus 1 Dungeon Lord Mantle, equals 14. Skills. Athletics. Basic, 8. The owner has trained his body to perform continuous physical activity without penalties to their endurance. For a while. Basic ranks allow them to perform mild energy-consuming tasks, non-combat, such as running or swimming without tiring. Unlocks stamina-related talents. Melee. Basic. 3. Martial skill. Represents the user's fighting technique. Allows access to some martial-related talents. Dungeon engineering. Improved. 4. This skill represents the user's knowledge of magical constructs pertaining to dungeon craft. As it improves, it opens new rooms and traps, as well as adding to the Dungeon Lord Mantle's capacity of storing the user's own blueprints. Combat casting. Basic. 5. Pertains to the speed and efficiency of spells cast during combat or life-threatening situations. Basic status allows the caster to use spells every 20 seconds minus 1 second per extra rank. The caster must say their names aloud and perform the appropriate hand gestures. Leadership. Basic. 8. Reflects the owner's capacity of inspiring and managing his troops and minions. For a dungeon lord, improving this skill adds to the bonus he and his minions receive. Talents. Evil Eye. Allows the dungeon lord to see the objectivity of any creature or item. If the targets of his gaze possess a strong spirit, or related attribute or skill, they may hide their information if the lord's own spirit is not high enough. Energy drain. Active. Very low. Dungeon Lord Mantle. The mantle is the heart of the Dungeon Lord and represents the Dark Pact made in exchange for power. It allows the Dungeon Lord access to the Dungeon Lord status and powers, as defined by the dungeon screen. It allows the Dungeon Lord to create and control dungeons, as per the limitations of his dungeon screen. Energy drain? None. Improved reflexes. Allows the owner to experience increased reaction time for a small period. Basic status elevates the owner's reaction speed to a degree dictated by the owner's agility for a duration of 3 seconds per use. Energy drain? Activated. High. Resist sickness. Basic. Allows its owner to resist disease and sickness. Basic status allows the owner to resist non-magical sickness as if they had an endurance of 15 and were in optimal conditions. Clean, well-fed, rested. Spellcasting. Basic. 3. Domains. General. Forbidden. Healing. Represents the owner's magical ability. Basic status allows the caster to use and learn all related basic spells of their domain. Extra ranks improve each individual spell's characteristics, such as range or damage. Efficient status grants the owner one extra basic spell. Allowed spells? One basic per day, plus one basic spell due to dungeon lordship. Energy drain? Active. Varies per spell. Ancient Lord Aura. The owner creates an aura around him that enhances allied beings inside its area of effect. Affected beings can use the Dungeon Lord's spirit as their own while this aura is active. Their physical attributes are also bolstered by one while this aura is active. If the creature is a minion of the Dungeon Lord, they are immune to fear while affected by this aura. Duration, 1 minute. Energy drain, activated. Moderate. Pledge of Armor. Any armor that the Dungeon Lord wears is considered magical, as if it had a minor protection enchantment. This bonus stacks with any protection enchantment the armor may have, or any other similar defensive enchantment. Magical armor can deflect spells of similar power category, as well as normal weaponry. Restriction? Selecting this talent locks out the Pledge of Bloodshed advancement option. Energy drain? Passive. Spell list. Minor order. Command. The caster forces a target creature to follow a simple order as long as said order is not immediately against the creature's moral code or presents a threat to its life. Eldritch Edge. Enchantment. The caster adds a magical flame to the edge of a weapon. This flame makes the weapon magical for the duration, allowing it to bypass weak magical defenses and mundane ones. Duration? 1 minute per spellcraft rank. Murmur's Reach. Command. Mantle. The caster possesses a minion located in the same dungeon as the caster. The caster's body is left defenseless during this time. Duration, 10 minutes per spellcraft rank. This has been Dungeon Lord, Otherworldly Powers, The Wraith's Haunt, Book 2. Written by Hugo Huesca. Narrated by Jeff Hayes. Featuring Annie Ellicott as the entire female cast. Proofing and editing by Dalton Lynn. Editing and mastering by Griffin Malnar. A Sound Booth Theater production. Copyright 2018 by Hugo Huesca. Production copyright 2018 by Sound Booth Theater. For more audiobooks, or to see us perform live, visit soundbooththeater.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.